This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, welcome to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. This is one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray. How you doing, Adam?
Thanks for having me. Ready for some more basketball fun.
You ready for some more basketball? Now, we're going to actually be catching up on the regular season, even though we haven't had too much of a regular season to catch up to. But, Adam, do you think even though there's a pretty small sampling, we're going to be talking about a lot of the different statements and different instant Monday morning quarterback reactions we've seen so far, but is there anything from the first 2 weeks of the season that you can really get a grasp on at this point?
Oh, number one, the Lakers are terrible. Number two, I guess Anthony Davis he's sort of okay.
That's a homer role, so I'm going to have to throw that back to Adam. He's a Boston Celtics fan, and we'll probably get to that. But, you know, it's the first, like we were just saying, it's 2 weeks into the regular season in the NBA, and there's really nothing there that you can say is definitive, clear, concise, because there's so many morphs and transformations throughout the regular season, and it's hard to just say, well, this is going to stay put, and that's all it is, and you close the book. Well, that's kind of silly, because you got 4 or 5 more months of NBA basketball to get through. There's injuries already that have been swarming in the NBA. The most recent ones were Ricky Rubio and Marcus Smart. They both went down with severe ankle injuries, so you just never, ever, ever know. So things change quickly, but so far you take what you're given, and we're just going to go ahead and find what we can. The title of this episode is going to be Keep Calm and Panic. You could probably put that on a shirt and get a few laughs. Because is it normal for most NBA analysts, Adam, to just take the first 2 weeks of the season and say, oh my God, it's all going to hell, or oh my God, this is over?
Well, they have nothing to talk about. The NBA's back. You need to fill 24 hours of coverage. You need to get any storyline, and we need 10 people to talk about the same storyline. So everything is over-fabricated, overreactions, and I miss the days where people are just happy that basketball is back. Now we need to have 10 stories in 10 minutes.
Yeah, it seems like that honeymoon session goes really quickly, and then you get into the grind of it, and people are just instantly like emotional over what this is and what that is and why this team lost that game and how everything's going to hell. We could probably name one specific heavily promoted team that's kind of going through that phase right now, and we're actually going to go ahead and just start with that team, and that is the Cleveland Cavaliers. And this is going to be our statement, even though it's not something, let's just go ahead and get this out the way. This is not something that Adam and I truly believe in. It's statements that you will hear out there in the media, and what we're going to do is we're going to slap a type of percentage of legitimacy on those statements to see how firm they can be and whether or not it's basically a bunch of bullshit. So here we're going to go with the first one. And this is the statement, Adam. The Cleveland Cavaliers are in serious trouble.
No, they're not in serious trouble. You have new pieces. You have a new coach with a new system. Preseason means nothing. It's just to get back into shape. The first few weeks are all meaningless. It's everybody's just overreacting.
But you weren't scared by the game where Kyrie Irving had 0 assists and the team as a whole had 6 assists in the Utah game?
The fact that Utah won with their mismatch of pieces, it was amazing, but no, because they're still learning. Kyrie was a 1-year point guard at Duke, and you know LeBron was used to having the ball with no point guard. It's just a new system, and it takes a while. You're not going to learn it overnight.
What I find interesting about the Cavs that I see already is that LeBron is – some people thought that LeBron was basically just quelling the overreactors so that when things went wrong like it is now, that he could say, well, I kind of told you this would happen. Some people thought at the time, oh, he's just trying to downplay it so that when they're successful, that, or if things go to hell, that they don't blame him for saying not one, not two, not three, not four, and all that stuff. But I do notice that there's a little bit of that malaise attitude with LeBron, where he's saying, just chill, it's okay, we're going to drop a few games. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And I don't remember LeBron ever doing that when he was in Cleveland the first time, and definitely when he was not in Miami. When he was Miami, it was like, you got to win now, 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 now. And it doesn't feel like that in Cleveland.
Well, that's called maturity.
Oh, yeah.
There's a difference between, oh, I'm going to have a big ESPN special, I'll tell everyone where I'm going, I'm playing with my friends now. No, now he actually gets it and understands, you know, the decorum of interviews.
Let me go ahead and transition this to a LeBron statement, and Bill Simmons got into, I wouldn't say trouble, but got into a bit of a tiff with Mike Golic from the Mike and Mike show over a this was a comment that Simmons had made, and I don't know if it really rings true. I don't believe it, but I'm going to throw it back to you and see what you think about it. LeBron James is entering a permanent state of decline.
No, he's not. By default, he's going to enter a state of decline. If he's already the number one player in the league, he has nowhere to go but down.
But that's the point. And do they think he's the number one player in the league anymore?
Well, nobody's overtaking him right now. Everybody's getting injured. So, yeah, he's not playing a center. He's not the focal point of the team. He's getting older. He's has mileage on his – yes, he's going to slow down. Yes, he's not the top. Also, the systems they're running, he doesn't need to be the guy in this Princeton offense. There's a lot of movement, a lot of things where he's not going to have the ball on any position, you know, for a couple
possessions.
Yeah, a lot
of reactionary sets where they're trying to get other people open. He's looking for him, but they're not looking for him, which is crazy because he's the best player in the league, you know?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. So, oh, is he done? No, that has nothing to do with anything. It's just, I would just say it's more, you're learning a new system, which I said before. Everybody's panicked. Well, what should they? Were they expecting Cleveland to go 82-0 or something?
No, but I don't think they expected them to lose their home opener to the Knicks and then lose to the Jazz and the Blazers game. Actually, I was kind of expecting. The Blazers have great home court, but the Utah loss and the New York loss, I think those are the ones that took them by surprise. But you and I said this in their team preview, and it stands true, is that Miami, this happened too, you know, where in the outset they did not really play great. And the problem in Miami is that Miami was in a situation where LeBron had to perform well from the outset because of how much expectations he placed on himself. And the safe thing about Cleveland is that he isn't in a situation where he has to win titles right away. But if you look at his numbers, 23 points, 6 rebounds, 6.2 assists, almost 2 steals. His field goal percentage is down, but that's about it. Everything else is about right.
Yeah, then how is that a big massive decline? What, because he doesn't have, you don't have a Bosch or a Wade who's also scoring 20 points, you're making him look easy?
Well, do you think Simmons was taken out of context?
He was taken out of context, but Simmons is also just sort of running his mouth for the sake of running his mouth now.
Yeah, he's become a troll.
Not as much a troll, it's just like, you could tell he's tired of ESPN, ESPN's tired of him, so...
Okay, and we're going to transition from LeBron and Cleveland. We think if we slapped a percentage on those two statements, we'd probably save, what, like 10%? Maybe like less than 10%?
The only panic in Cleveland is the fact they have no bench, which is what we mentioned. Deion Waiters sitting in the starting lineup is probably is the most harm to the team right now. Because
he got benched and put to the six-man role in the Denver game.
Yeah, now he's going to be pouting, and now it's going to become it could become kind of toxic.
Mm-hmm.
If he'd just been happy, like, oh, I have no problem scoring points, he'll be on the court at the end. Does it matter whether you start or come off the bench? No, I don't think it does.
And I think Love's and Irving's defensive deficiencies have definitely not improved. They just haven't.
No, they haven't. Point. And again, it takes a while to learn. You have a new body, and you don't know where he's going to go, how he's going to react. So it takes time.
It takes time. And I'll give you one team that is probably going to take a little bit of time to get to full health, and this is one I think is actually going to stand a little higher than the one that we talked about with Cleveland, and that is the Oklahoma City Thunder are in serious trouble.
No, they're not in serious trouble. People are just, well, for one, people really don't care about Oklahoma City. They lose their two best stars, everyone's like, whatever. They're not going to win it anyways. There's just, I don't know, there's, maybe it's just all the, because it's all Cleveland talk all the time, but they're going to, they get the 8 seed. Oh, Oklahoma City's the 8 seed, and they're going to upset the number 1 seed.
Well, they're 1-5 right now, though, Adam.
Yeah. I
mean, they're in a tough spot right now, and they're going to be missing Westbrook for at least another couple of weeks. And it just doesn't seem like the team's going to get any better than they are now, because they already had to use hardship waivers in order to get more players on their team. And unless you can fast-track Durant's recovery from the foot fracture, I just don't know how many games they're going to win. And if you have, you know, teams like the LA Clippers, the Houston Rockets, San Antonio Spurs, and they're just, like, winning one game after the next, and you keep dropping, and you're 8 games below 500. This reminds me of when – you remember in 03, right after they three-peated, when Shaq had the arch – he got the arch worked on his foot in surgery, and he was out for like the first month of the season, and the team really struggled, and they didn't get back to 500 until January. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. But oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know Memphis, who's 6-1, is going to stay 6-1, and Sacramento, who's 5-1, will be a top contender too.
Sacramento's the surprise.
I'm pretty sure things will come back to normal come All-Star break, and all it takes is a nice little 10-game run, and all of a sudden, oh, well, now they're in the back in the swing of things.
Let me ask you this. If Russell Westbrook had stayed healthy, do you think the record would have been the same?
Well, they wouldn't have been 1-5, but they wouldn't be 5-1.
We're going to talk about now Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook's previous teammate, and that's James Harden. James Harden will win league MVP.
No.
He's playing well, though.
He's playing well, but MVP is a politics game, and after the first week, for some strange reason, I think they're just going to be like, oh, we need to give it to Kobe because we all love Kobe and we want to know we love
him. This ain't Major League Baseball when you win the MVP on a last place team.
I don't see him winning it. He's putting up good numbers now, yeah, but that's implying that no one else will get better.
25 points, 6.7 rebounds, 7.1 assists. You and I were talking about in the team preview for the Rockets how they would handle Patrick Beverley as a potential point guard now that Jeremy Lin is gone. And what I've realized is that Beverley is only a point guard by name. He is there to handle the ball at times, but the true ball handler is Harden. And I think that's what's made the Rockets so dangerous, is that when you have the ball in Harden's hands all the time, if he's willing to share the ball to all those three-point shooters, because they're bombing threes right now, they average 13 makes a game, and then you have Dwight Howard down low. If Harden shares the ball just enough, and he has the ball all the time, getting in the free-throw line and drilling threes, I mean, that is a nightmare scenario for any dueling guard that night.
Oh, yeah, that is, but at the same time, with Patrick Beverley, you're playing 4-on-5. So what happens, you know, would it be better if you had Harden running around, sort of posting up? Yeah, it's working now, but what's going to happen 20 games when teams have figured this out now?
Yes, exactly. There's so many adjustments to be made, and a lot of teams that start hot, they don't stay that way. Remember the Philadelphia 76ers last year? They actually had a winning record, I think, through the first 2 weeks of the season. And we all know how that ended. Now, we don't know how this one's going to end, but this is going to be the statement that everybody has been saying. And this one, I think we could slap a good percentage on. The Philadelphia 76ers are the worst team ever.
That's a fairly good percentage.
Are they worse than the I interviewed Charlie Rosen. We talked about the 9-73 76ers. You think they're worse than them?
The 9-win 76ers actually tried. This team just doesn't – you're not starting NBA players, really. There's no...
Tony Roden is their best player because Carter Williams is out with, a shoulder injury.
Yeah, he had surgery in the offseason. And, you're limiting Noel. You're bringing him along slowly. He's not on the floor all night. You're playing, people like Chris Johnson, who was cast off from the Celtics.
And we love Scott Criscolo, but Hollis Thompson and Henry Sims are just not good options.
No, and there's zero bench and... Jakar Sampson's an undrafted free agent from St. John's
that
who has no position.
It's just a mess.
It's you blatant tanking, and I remember in the previews, like, no, Magic will be worse. I'm like, I don't think there's any
they're close.
Team that's
well,
worse.
You know what? I'm sorry. They actually won a game here and there, so they're not, like, in the basement. There's only two teams that are winless, and
that's Philly and the Lakers.
And the Lakers. But the Lakers are awful. We'll get to them in a second. But the Philadelphia is, like, they are an all-time kind of bad. And you can see it from the outset. Their losing differential is 9.7 points. I mean, they averaged 90. They've been averaging 94 points a game, 103 given up. 103 is one of the worst defensive teams. I think we already knew that about them. Thaddeus Young is gone. Roden we already talked about, but after that, I don't know who else they have that's really making a difference. They're at a point where they're playing KJ McDaniels, who was a second rounder out of Clemson, and he's not even guaranteed next year. This is, like, basically an audition for him.
The team was just built to fail. It's not really fair. Like, the GM didn't try. Ownership's like, yeah, we'll just be blatantly tanking. And it's... What happened? Didn't they trade for, like, didn't they get Travis Outlaw? Whatever happened to him?
They traded Outlaw, and I think they cut him immediately.
Of course, why not?
Yeah, we don't need those. We don't need those quote unquote good players.
We don't need any players. Let's just get garbage. And no, the 76ers are just it's kind of sad that in this day and age, this is what you have to do. I'd feel really bad if I were a 76ers fan.
The only bright spot so far has been Nerlens Noel, who's had a few highlight blocks and a couple of good statistical games, but he's a little bit out of his league as a center right now. He's learning. Will he win Rookie of the Year? Maybe, maybe not. It's way too early to tell with the rookies, even though the rookies I've seen so far haven't really impressed me that much, sadly. But I think he's played well. But if he's one of your best players and Brandon Davies is playing in front of him as a center, then that's not good. That's not good at all. And
no, like I said, they're bringing him along slow now when there's nothing but time on the court, and like, no, we'll limit your minutes because we need to take it. Like, no,
will it pay off in dividends like down the road when MB gets back from his foot injury and they play together? Maybe, but that's like when Anthony Davis got to New Orleans. You have to lose a bit in order to win a bit. So, and the other team we'll talk about is the other one we were saying that was also the only other winless team in the league, and that's the LA Lakers out in the Western Conference. They haven't won a game yet. Kobe Bryant is leading the league in scoring, but that's the only thing that the Lakers are leading in instead of sucking. This is going to be our bullet point for the Lakers, and this is one I heard a couple of times. The Lakers should trade Kobe Bryant while they have the chance.
They're not going to trade him. People just want to do that for talk.
But should they?
No, because he's the only person that sells tickets. People are still lining up to see Kobe. Yeah, he's averaging 27 points a game. He's also averaging probably like 27 shots a game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he is absolutely like
he's
drilling,
terrible.
Like,
he's
shots
just taking... Like, I think, what was it, a couple games ago, he had, like, 37 points on 37 shots. It's just
yes.
Like, no, that's not Kobe. He's done.
He's averaging 24 shots a game.
Yeah, that's – get 27 points off 24 shots, that's ugly and disgusting.
Yeah,
and
40% when his career is 45 is not a good sign.
But he's the only – if you take Kobe off that team and let's say you trade him for promising young people, no one is going to go to those games. Kobe is the only person you're lining up to see. And it was sort of like, a Jeter thing in New York. Okay, we're going to pay him now for his loyalty, and the fans will come to see Kobe one last time. But he's done.
Yeah, and the Lakers got a little stink bit with the Julius Randle. Unfortunately, he broke his leg in the opening night game.
Opening night.
Carlos Boozer looks done. He just looks done. And
the one promising thing is Ed Davis.
Mm-hmm.
He looks good, and
Swaggy P's not back yet. He's too busy dancing in the club with Iggy Azalea.
Yeah, so he could shoot up 30 shots as well. The Lakers are, you know, as a Boston fan, like, oh, that's great. The Lakers are terrible, but their fan base, no fan base deserves terrible teams like the Lakers and the 76ers.
Yeah, but the Lakers fan, the people who hate the Lakers would say that they had it coming to them.
Well, they did have it coming with all their, you know, trades and whatnot. But again, if you're fielding players like Xavier Henry and Wesley Johnson and you're putting them into starting roles, it's just like, are you really trying?
Okay, we're going to go ahead and stop with the COVID. That percentage is like 0.1% chance of actually being able to happen. But, you know, it's one that people have been talking about, but I didn't even think about it when
it was like, I will compare it to this. After the Cincinnati Bengals game here in New England, when they destroyed the Patriots, you had a couple reporters like, oh, they need to start Garoppolo and bench Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people just want to say stuff for any reason. Just
fill,
to
fill
get,
the time.
Just to get clicks or just to get airtime.
Mm-hmm. We're going to stay in the state of California, but this is actually a better story than the Lakers, and that is the combination of Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, my lord. This is going to be the bullet point. The Splash Brothers, Curry and Thompson, are the most lethal duo in the NBA.
By default.
Well, there's good ones, though. You know, you got Durant and Westbrook.
We're both out. That's why I'm like, who's left?
Griffin and Paul and Chris Paul and James Harden and Dwight Howard and even Bosh and Wade in a ways.
Yeah, but that's all big and small, big and small, big and small. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact you have two backcourt guys who play well off each other and
are willing to pass the ball.
Yeah,
that's what makes it dangerous.
Team concept. That's, you know. Again, like, the only comparison would have been a Durant and Westbrook.
I said this to somebody else. Either Steve Kerr is really, really smart, or Mark Jackson just didn't know what he was doing. Because they look so different now.
A little from column A, a little from column B. Kerr has made them better, but really, the front court at Golden State, I'm not impressed with this season.
Yeah, but their defense has stepped up and their rebounding is still high.
But their defense was good last year.
It was. That's true. That's not a new thing. The new thing is that offensively they run much cleaner sets. You know, they run a little bit of triangle. They run a lot of pick and roll. They run a lot of flare screens for Curry like you and I expected when we previewed them. You can tune into that. And Thompson has really emerged since the FIBA World Cup alongside Curry. He's averaging 23 points. He already had a 40-point game against the Lakers. He's shooting 47%. Defensively, he's not a bad player either. And Curry, I think, is leading the league in steals. So defensively, they're your linchpins too.
Yeah. So, you know, by default, they are the best duo in the NBA.
But do you see the Warriors finishing as the best team in the NBA since they're the last undefeated team?
There's a possibility in the Western Conference. They can, it's between, they're the last undefeated, but it's them and, I'll say the Clippers.
Okay, that's a good segue. The Clippers-Warriors is the best rivalry in the NBA.
There is no rivalry in the NBA right now. It's the closest thing to a rivalry is Chicago and Washington. They're the only two teams that seem to not like each other right now, but every other team is just like, eh. It's November. Why are we putting energy into this?
We've talked about this many times, and we will mention it in a later show, is that we hate the fact that rivalries, because of the fact that players are either buddy-buddy with each other, or they're constantly bouncing from one team to the next, so there's no, like, year-to-year allegiances, that rivalries have basically disappeared in the NBA, and the only reason this is even being brought up is because Adam and I are desperate to find those again, because we feel like leagues, the NBA, when it has blood-fueled rivalries, are the best ones, and well, they're missing.
It's kind of hard to have a rivalry when they all just came off playing for Team USA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they played in the Dream Team, and they all hated each other.
But the Dream Team, the first one, they had a lot of players in the end of their careers. It wasn't like now where you have the young, in their prime guys who just have, you know, hey, we're all making $15 million. We're all max contracts. Let's just go have fun and enjoy everything. It's not – the times have changed.
Yes, it's a very, very different time with the rivalries. But the Clippers and the Warriors, I mean, every time I watch them play, though, Adam, it just feels like there's a little bit something there. They just do not like each other. It's almost like the Heat and the Celtics a few years ago, where it was just like – that was another really good rivalry. But the problem with that one, and like a lot of rivalries in the NBA today, is that they don't last. You can't sustain them for years and years and years because of salary cap reasons, and teams don't stay good for that long and stay on top for that long, you know, feuding against one another.
Well, the way the rivalries have just sort of worked is because the way the playoffs have worked, and it's okay, we know we'll see them in the second round, and mm-hmm. The Celtics were notorious for, you know what, let's take a couple weeks off at the end. We don't care if we're the sixth seed. We'll play on the
road.
We'll
play catch up. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot of that now, like, okay, we know we're going to see Miami in the second round.
Mm-hmm. And there is consistency with playoff standings, but, you know, just to take off from, you know, the other theme for our website that that the podcast is under, this isn't wrestling. This isn't something where you can just gimmick the same two guys on the top to be feuding against one another forever and ever and ever. It's not like Manning and Brady, where you can just book them in a primetime slot every single year, regardless of how good or bad the teams are. You know, in the NBA, you got to leave it to chance. And sometimes these teams, some of them stand up, and then some of them falter. And then you have this year like Indiana, where they seem to be the team that's trying to challenge Miami, and now Indiana is in disarray, and Miami is starting over without LeBron. So all of a sudden, that rivalry, gone. So, I mean, it seems like we're like picking for, like, searching for needles in a haystack, but I feel like Golden State and the Clippers is the one that really stands out, because there is dislike, there is animosity, and I hope that carries over in the playoffs, because they both play really good basketball. That's the other key.
It'll be good basketball, but I just don't see this, like, you know, franchise versus franchise, and
mm-hmm.
I just don't see that there.
Okay, we're going to talk about individual players now for some statements. This one really hurts, literally, but I'm just going to have to throw it out there because he's already suffered two ankle injuries since coming back. Derrick Rose will never regain his elite form.
What is he averaging this year?
Give me – if you fill the time, I'll get it.
he is injured, but – I don't know. The problem is he's just 1 year back again after another year injury. We won't know how good he is until 2-3 years from now. Will he get his elite form this year? At the end of the season, probably. Chicago has more problems on their hand right now. They haven't dominated like everyone thought they would.
Well, they dropped the game just recently. They have two losses so far as of this post. But they haven't played poorly. I feel like that they've been impressive in most of the games. The one really competitive game I've seen so far was when Chicago at home played Cleveland. That was the one game where I really felt like, man, this almost feels like playoff basketball. But
okay, yes, the Cleveland was one. They beat Minnesota by one. Mm-hmm. They beat Orlando only by eight.
Orlando's terrible, by the way.
They beat Philly by three. They lost to Boston at home without Rondo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And without Marcus Smart.
Derrick Rose was off too, but
his numbers right now, 15.3 points, let me see here, 3 rebounds and 5.3 assists. That's actually pretty close to the numbers he had last year before he got hurt again. So
that just sounds like a rusty player who's starting to come back.
Yeah, but will he ever come back? That's what we keep asking ourselves. You know, are we just waiting for something that's never going to come through that door?
He's either going to come back or have another injury. I don't see him staying at this level.
Well, but do you think he's going to play mediocre basketball for the rest of his career? Do you think he'll be a very good player?
No, he'll be a very good player. Can he be an elite player? I still say that window's not closed. However, it's, he has that Grant Hill specter of will he get injured again this game?
Yeah, but you said the window's not closing, but the wind is sure getting thin under there. I mean, you got
it's coming down, but he is still young enough to the point where if he, because he's only, he's 26, I believe.
Okay.
If he were 29, like Rondo, I'd be like, okay, you're kind of done.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
I still think as good as he was, you're not going to come back to 100% overnight. You got to come back at 70%. Okay, now you're 80%. And if he can, if he doesn't get injured again, yeah, he can come back because I still think he's young enough.
We talked about a guy in Derrick Rose who was on a meteoric rise before he had, like we just said, a terrible, terrible setback. Let's talk about another player who right now is on a meteoric rise. And this is going to be the statement. This is going to be a homer roll a little bit because I'm a Pelicans fan, but we're going to shoot for this anyway because his numbers are just ridiculous. Anthony Davis is unstoppable.
Right now, yes, but here's a question for you. Is he or Omar Asik more valuable to the team right now?
Anthony Davis is more valuable as an overall player, but
right now in this season, not who's a better player.
In this season, in terms of who has made the best impact in terms of improving the team as a whole, it is definitely Asik. Because of the fact that him alongside Davis gives Davis the freedom to play power forward or sometimes even small forward because he's got the finesse skills to shoot and get by his man, whether he's playing the three or the four. And it lets Asik strictly play the five, which he does very, very well at the center position because he's a great offensive rebounder. He's a great general rebounder. And he's a solid defender on the pick and roll. So now Davis is not the one who's got all that responsibility down low to have to eliminate and eradicate pick and roll plays or screen and roll plays. Asik is there to do that now. So it gives Anthony Davis more offensive freedom. But the thing that's unbelievable about Davis is that his offense has improved to 24 points a game. But the rebounding has gotten to 12.8 rebounds. The assists have gone down, but I don't blame him for that. And the block shots are at 4 a game, and he's shooting at 50%. I mean, you can't foul the guy, too, because he's an 82% free throw shooter. So how the fuck do you guard this guy?
You really can't. You just have to let him just start missing shots because he's not going to be this hot the entire season. But, like I said, with Asik there, Davis has space to move around now, which I noticed from watching him this season. He didn't have that. He was always anchored into his plays.
Yeah, because you had Withy and Alexis Zinka, and he got stuck there because you didn't want to just get raped inside.
Mm-hmm. So I think his dominance is because of that quality signing.
Mm-hmm.
A quality trade.
It's a solid trade. Now, obviously, the payout for that last deal, for the last year of that deal, is a little bit mighty, but it's okay because they didn't have to pay the entire amount, and they might be able to re-sign him if Tom Benson's willing to go over the cap, thanks to all those guards that they signed over. And I like how Drew Holiday has played, and Tyreek Evans has played great. Eric Gordon, you can go to hell. But
Eric Gordon is doing, he's getting.
I think he's personally tanking.
He's still hitting shots. He's still getting 16, 17 points a game.
Mm-hmm.
He's not bad. Is he overpaid now? Yes. Is he the player that injuries took him out? Okay, he's taken out. But everybody's healthy in that team, and they have a winning record because everybody's finally healthy.
Yeah, Davis had a game winner against the San Antonio Spurs in the AT&T Center. They haven't won there in like 4 years. So things are looking up there for the New Orleans Pelicans. Hopefully that stays for at least for myself as a fan. Let me go ahead and talk about your team, the Boston Celtics. And this one's a shocker. I did not expect this. The Boston Celtics are an offensive juggernaut.
I don't understand this year's Celtics.
Like, how are they scoring points, and not only that, at a high clip?
They're just running up and down. Like, there was, you know, I went to the Pacers game, and the Pacers are terrible. The Pacers are look to be blatantly tanking.
They're a mash unit.
They don't have much. They're better off for not trying. But the Celtics just don't look good, but somehow they're scoring all these points.
It's just crazy because it just seems like they're not relying on one guy. They have this crazy backcourt that obviously they got hampered by an injury and then a surgical operation that is going to be very, very temporary for Rondo. But they have this trio in the backcourt with Rondo, Avery Bradley, and Marcus Smart, who are defensively a fucking pain in the ass to play against. And then
I don't know where Avery Bradley came from this year. All of a sudden he gets paid and then he decides he feels like hitting every shot now.
Yeah, I think our buddy Rick Barnes gave him a call just for motivation.
Like, you know, he's averaging 15 points a game this season. It's just like, well, where did that come from? Of course he's probably going to get injured in like another month or so, like he usually does, but he is the team. I don't know. Like, they went last year from just being a mediocre team that played sort of really good defense to a team that plays no defense and now could just shoot.
Which is a shock because Brad Stevens was the opposite in college. You know, his Butler teams were very, very tight-lipped. They played defense. They were junkyard dogs almost. They played very hard all the time. And now you have this team where, you know, you got guys like Kelly Olynyk. They're chucking threes. Jared Sullinger, he's going on the attack. Jeff Green is taking threes. Evan Turner is going on about his business. And it's kind of unbelievable to people. And yes, it means that Brandon Bass doesn't get as many minutes as he used to, but that's okay because you got other guys that are offensively a little more talented than Bass, and it gives them a little bit more firepower when they rotate their guys. Because the thing about the Celtics that is making them better than people expected is that they're deeper than people thought.
They're deeper, but as everybody expected, they are a tiny team, and their teams are going to figure out the easiest way to beat them is just go big. Mm-hmm. When you have, like, there were times, you know, on this weekend when Jared Sullinger was playing the five, and it's just like they had him and Bass. I'm like, no, they can't rebound for anything. And yeah, you just run big ball against the Celtics and it's just an easy victory.
Do you think the 106 points a game is a mirage though?
Yes, because I think they're just shooting hot right now. And
47% as a team.
I don't know. They have some trades they need to do. They need to get bigger.
Okay. We'll go with two more guys and we'll finish up our keep calm and panic category of this podcast. DeMarcus Cousins is the best big man in the NBA. The best center in the NBA.
How many big men are left these days? Him, Dwight Howard, and
maybe Anthony Davis if you want to cheat.
Well, you just said he's a four now.
Yeah, he plays. He can play 3, 4, or 5. But now they got him at 4 because of Ashiq. But no, he's not a true center. I agree with you there. He's not a true center. So Boogie is a true center.
Well, the thing with Cousins is everyone already knew he had the talent. He just was just a head case.
Is he? He still might be a little bit.
Yeah, he still is, but hopefully this time with Team USA has sort of let him wise him up as, oh, if I could be as dominant as I want to be. I would still say Dwight Howard is the guy to beat.
Howard, I mean, the offensive numbers are unbelievable, but for Boogie, I mean, the numbers are crazy, and the team is – we're saying this because the Kings are 5-1. They've played very well. They've beaten good teams. They've beaten the Clippers and the Suns, and Rudy Gay is actually having a good year. By the way, he's in his contract year. But the thing is with Boogie, he's got 24 points, 11.8 rebounds, 1.5 assists. Who cares about that? 1.33 blocks. The numbers are actually kind of close to what he was before, but it seems like he's playing better in that system and helping his teammates more.
Yeah, it seems like the new system might have helped him. But again, okay, they're 5-1. Two of those games were back-and-backs against Denver, and Phoenix isn't a title team, so. And we don't know what Portland is yet. They seem to be Jekyll and Hyde-ish right now, so.
The Pacific Division, the Southwest Division to me is still the toughest division, but the Pacific Division is like right behind it. That is a really, really tough division. When you're, I mean, the Lakers, take them out of the equation. They suck. But then after that, you go to the Clippers, the Warriors, the Kings, who have played well, and then you've got the Suns, who've got that crazy 1-2-3 punch with Dragic, Isaiah Thomas, and Eric Bledsoe. I mean, there's really not an easy game on any night, especially if Kobe gets hot.
Well, Kobe will always be hot and still score.
40% shooting is not hot.
I just said he'll still keep shooting it. So he'll get his points.
Okay.
Again, they beat Denver twice. And that's not... Their record is sort of a mirage right now, but... Cousins is a top two, top three center, obviously. The best one? No, because... Everybody's sort of waiting for him to screw it up somehow.
Yeah, and defensively, I think he's gotten better. I think the FIBA World Cup helped him, but I think he's got a little bit more maturity as a player, not necessarily as a person. I don't care about that right now. But as a player, it seems like he's starting to get there closer and closer to becoming a great player. But becoming a great player also entails that you have to win all the time, and I don't know if the Kings can do that yet. I will talk about a guy on a team that's losing a lot and probably will for the future, but I'll ask you this. Nikola Vucevic will win the rebounding title.
Okay. You can sort of tell me anyone will win the rebounding title. I'll be like, alright.
But if Vucevic won it, it'd be a bit of a surprise.
How so?
Because of the fact that even though he's on a terrible team and he gets more opportunities than others do, I don't think people would expect a team like Orlando to have a guy that good within a 3 or 4 year span. I think that would surprise people.
Well, you would usually think one of the worst teams had the best rebounders because, by default they're giving up more shots anyways.
That's true, depending on how slowly or how quickly you play. The Philadelphia is renowned for playing fast. I'm not sure about Orlando's numbers, but Vucevic is averaging 12.3 rebounds. Actually, if you stare at the standings right now, that's a little bit behind Anthony Davis, but they're basically neck and neck.
Oh, then why isn't Anthony Davis going to win the rebounding and the title and the MVP and most improved player?
Because Anthony Davis is too busy winning the scoring title and the block shots title. And the field goal percentage title. Forgot about that one.
Anthony Davis, Cousins.
Yeah. Dwight Howard always.
Kevin Love will get his numbers up eventually once he figures out where to be.
Mm-hmm. You know what's crazy about Love? He really hasn't gotten into a comfort zone as a rebounder, and he's still averaging 11 rebounds a game.
Yeah, that's why I'm, expect other people's numbers to go up. It's the first season. Orlando doesn't have depth or really... coaching depth is let's try out new things. Let's see what works. They're just like, look, we know we're tanking. Go out there and play. We've already mentioned on the coaches episode, Jacques Vaughn. I don't know. Yeah, so teams are tweaking their systems. I think Orlando's like, yep, we know what we're running. This is what we're going to do.
Okay, and we're going to go ahead and leave that category, but we're going to continue to talk about players like Nikola Vucevic. Vucevic was drafted in the 2011 NBA draft. And that was actually the draft class that is now coming up with their rookie contracts ending and entering restricted free agency. Now, a lot of these teams, before the season begins, there's a deadline in which if you get it past there, you can try to sign these guys to extensions for different types of salaries. Some go for max and some don't. For those rookie contracts so that you don't have to wait to have them go to the restricted free agency in the summer of 2015 and take your chances of losing them, like, say, for example, Chandler Parsons did for the Houston Rockets. So we have a few of them that were able to get their extensions done before the season started, and we're going to go ahead and tally those up, and we're going to try to figure out some of them, and whether they stand and whether who got overpaid or not, and I think Adam and I have a few differing opinions there. We'll start with the big one, and actually this one happened in July, and that was Kyrie Irving getting 5 years for $90
million. At the time, nobody really complained, but at the time, you also didn't know that LeBron would come back and bring, you know, his miscellaneous all-stars with him.
I think the question there with Irving is that, is he a true point guard? I don't know if he is. And the other question is he going to ever become an elite guard to complement LeBron James, not try to overstep him?
But again, like, you know, these are all questions now because he's now a different player from – or a different – the team is now different than from what they thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
They needed a face of the franchise because they were woefully bad, and, you know, you have just a bunch of assorted top 10 picks that are all fizzling out. I mean, you know, right now he's still scoring 20 a game.
Yeah.
He's woefully bad, four assists.
Yeah. He's doing okay. He's doing okay as a point guard. Is he an all-star caliber point guard right now? I don't know, because his defense isn't there, his passing definitely isn't there, and I think he's got to improve in certain aspects. It's crazy because he won All-Star Game MVP last year, but...
Well, here's a question. Can anybody be an All-Star point guard with LeBron James on your team, who you know has to get the ball?
Well, that's a good question, because some people would say that Dwayne Wade played the point guard position, truly, when he was with the Miami Heat, and that Chalmers was just basically a placeholder. He was just there as like kind of like a decoy, and that the true ball handler was Wade. But I think you could kibosh that pretty fast because of the fact that LeBron played point forward almost all the time down the
street. Exactly. So Irving has to learn a new role of not being the go-to guy, and you sort of have to, especially with the slowdown system. And
well, let me ask you this. Is there going to be a point where LeBron, let's say it's like January, February, and they need to get on a roll, and LeBron just says, fuck it, I'm going to take the ball myself, and I'm going to start taking over games?
I think Irving could slide to the two in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I think he plays well off the ball when the time comes. And
but the 5 years, $90 million, that would be in the neighborhood. I'm trying to do the math in my head. That's something in the grade like $16 million or so. Do you think that's a fair deal?
Max contract money. Well, the bellwether this year was the 4 years, $48 million,
mm-hmm.
which seems like everybody got that. So
yeah. We'll talk about one guy that went past that, and I think you and I like this one. I think everybody's liking this one, at least right now. Klay Thompson, 4 years, $70
million. Yeah, he got his max deal, and everybody's happy with it. And I don't really – there's not much you could say about it. It's just like, okay, he's the player you want. He's only worth that money because I think he plays next to Steph Curry, and they complement each other. If you put in another player there
– oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so
I think actually in that discussion, that Thompson would be the one that would be hurt more by Curry's absence, and Curry would be hurt by Thompson's absence.
Exactly. So he's just at the right place at the right time to get his money. But, you know, it's the Warriors needed to do it.
Are you in a sense glad that the trade didn't happen with Kevin Love?
I'm indifferent. If they had Kevin Love, the team would be, I think, just as good.
I don't know about that. I think Thompson is more vital to that team and the lifeblood of that team than just inserting Love with Bogut and saying, okay, just go ahead and take a bunch of shots. Like, I don't know if that would have worked.
Well, David Lee, it would be an upgrade over David Lee, who was pretty good in his own right, so...
Mm-hmm, that's true. But then you lose your top small forward.
You lose your shooting.
Harrison Barnes.
You just don't become a 3-point shooting team.
Mm-hmm.
You become more of a grinding team.
Let's go ahead and talk about Vucevic, who we mentioned earlier. He got 4 years, $54 million. I think you and I both like this.
Oh, that was a quality signing, and everybody knew it was going to get done, and it's the right price, and he is a solid player who But should that, hopefully be the cornerstone of that Orlando team.
But that was at the sacrifice of not being able to ink an extension with Tobias Harris because you don't want to tie up your money, which means that there's a good chance that if somebody overpays on the offer sheet, that Orlando might be forced to let Tobias Harris go.
Well, with Harris, it was one of those things like, do you sign him now? Or if you're Harris, you're like, well, I can play myself up and get some more money.
In which case, I think he'll probably play himself up because his numbers are always solid in the regular
season. It's like the Jimmy Butler is the same thing, where it's just it's like, why would I want to sign for 50 when knowing this team is bad, knowing I could now start, you know, dominating and developing into a more well-rounded player, somebody's going to want to pay more for that. So it didn't make sense for Harris to settle for less.
Mm-hmm.
And Orlando, I don't see them – he can't go up too much more because he's not worth max money yet. Can he play himself into it?
The politics of player-agent meetings and team meetings, because this is what a lot of it is. Another one here, this one I think we like too, and he played great in FIBA World Cup, and that was Kenneth Faried. He got 4 years, $50 million. The Nuggets haven't played well, but Faried is probably their best overall player.
Yeah, well, the Nuggets, you know, they were, we said in the previews, the whole team was injured, so it takes a while for this team to come back and be like, who is our identity now?
Mm-hmm.
They haven't figured it out yet, but again, we just mentioned they played back-to-back with Sacramento, so Faried was a good signing. In the end, it might be bad because Faried, as good as he is, he's just an energy player. So what happens when he starts getting older and we get to year five and that energy is pretty much gone?
Yeah, you know what you turn into? You turn into Charles Oakley.
Exactly.
A good garbage bench player.
Faried is sort of slowed down, but you know, right now the team has no identity. No, everybody, their starting lineup averages from 12.8 points to 9.4.
Mm-hmm.
They're all even. They're all just, okay, we'll all take the same amount of shots. We'll all get the same amount of points. There's no player who stepped up yet. There's no identity. There's no...
Do you think Brian Shaw's in trouble?
Too early to tell, but his is probably a little warmer than other teams right now.
I'm going to tell you, if they don't crack about three wins before Thanksgiving, I mean, Brian Shaw might get the axe.
Yeah, but after five games, you're not like, well, you're fired. It's just, why are we kind of starting off slow, guys?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? Does anybody sort of want to play right now?
Because Stan Kroenke, the owner of the Nuggets, he's kind of an impatient guy. You know, people don't think he is because they had George Karl for so long. But the moment Karl slipped, they let him go. And then they did the same thing to Jeff Bezdelic before that. The moment he started slipping, they let him go.
Yeah, that's the problem, is they'll be impatient and they'll, you know, we'll see how much love, like, you know, the current TV analysts get on the market right now. And
because
apparently that's the only people you need to hire are TV analysts.
Faried, I mean, we don't know how the Nuggets are going to be this year. They're a little bit, like we already said in the team preview, they're a bit of a hodgepodge. But Faried, he got better, and he got the money he needed. Let's talk about Ricky Rubio, 4 years, $55 million. A lot of people thought this deal wasn't going to get done before the deadline, and it did.
Well, that was because, his agent was like, oh, he's going to get a max money. We're going to hold out.
He was playing hardball, yeah.
Yeah, he's playing hardball, and it's just like everyone's like, oh, that's a terrible deal. Rubio's horrible. Well, who else are you going to go sign? You're going to – all they've done pretty much is just draft point guards who have failed or get retread backup point guards who you wind up cutting.
That team is weird, and I know Rubio suffered from an injury. He'll be out indefinitely. They're saying about 3 weeks. And I don't know if that doesn't affect me. Like, I don't look at an injury and say, oh, you see, you're not worth your contract. That's stupid. But that team is so weird. Like, Rubio sat and the guy who started with Zach LaVine. And then I've been watching games, and they'll play Thaddeus Young, Gorgie Jang, Andrew Wiggins, and Nikola Pekovic all at once. They're all forwards. You know, it's just a weird team.
Yeah, and, you know, Andrew Wiggins, which we'll talk about rookies soon, you know, he's not dominating. Like, I don't know. Some people have unrealistic expectations.
Oh, and, for sure, for Wiggins. Absolutely.
Yeah. But Rubio, you know, he was averaging 10 assists before he got this current injury. Is it a bad sign? No. You know who he is, and what are you going to go after? Reggie Jackson, who is just a backup, and you know Oklahoma City's not going to pay him. So it's just one of those cases, take the guy you know, he's the face of your team. I'm not against it as some other people are. Is it a little high? Kind of, but he can play into it.
Kemba Walker got 4 years, $48 million. You and I were debating what money he would get, and I said it would be somewhere probably in this neighborhood, maybe a little less, but he got $12 million. You already have Lance Stephenson inked for 9 years, $9 million a year for 3 more years. And so that's $21 million for Kemba Walker and Lance Stephenson. That's not a bad deal at all.
That's not a bad deal, but you are much higher on Kemba than I am. And
he had that game winner, though. You saw that in the double overtime game?
Oh, that's one game. That's, you
Chris
know.
Cascolo is ready to wring your neck right now.
But that's just one game. It's – I don't – you know, four years, 40th, that's what everybody seems to be getting. Okay, whatever, I'm cool with that. Lance Stephenson, we still know he's not the one who's stepping up like everyone thought. Everyone thought he'd be like an MVP candidate now. He's not really doing much down there.
Yeah, actually, I take that back. Walker hit a game winner like in the home opener. Lance hit a game winner in the double overtime game that just passed. So even they're both playing okay. They've had off and on performances. The only thing famous that Lance has done so far was that video bomb he did on Derek Fisher that, you know, hit Twitter like in a hurry. But Lance is crazy. And I think it's one of those situations where they got underpaid because Kemba doesn't know how to be an elite player yet, and Lance just doesn't know any better. So you got him, you got those two.
Lance is more a bargain than Kemba. Kemba is just the market right now. He got paid the average. Okay, he's an average point guard. Lance was a bargain because of reasons we've mentioned. You know, again, you're the Kemba backer. He's better than. He's already there. It's better giving him the money than hoping some other rookie comes in and, you know, he's the third best point guard in the class. Well, let's hope he's the good one.
Well, geez, he's better than Brandon Knight.
Brandon Knight is playing well, if you've noticed.
Oh, yeah. He kind of.
He's kind of Milwaukee, although they're still losing like everyone expected.
You know, I go out of my way and I say that I can't stand Brandon Knight and I don't think he plays well. He still shoots 41%, even though his numbers have improved. But, yeah, they've won a few games, and I think Jason Kidd's rubbed off on him well. But that's as much as I'll say about Brandon Knight. That's all I'll say. But he's played better. I mean, I think he's benefit from the fact that Jason Kidd actually knows how to run some of these forwards in the rotation, especially now that they have Jabari Parker there. And I'll go out of my way and probably say that Parker's still going to win the Rookie of the Year. It seems like he's the guy that gets the most minutes, even though he hasn't impressed me yet. But Brandon Knight is a guy that actually did not get a deal. One guy that did get a deal who I think is actually worse than Brandon Knight is Alec Burks. He got 4 years, $42 million.
Alec Burks is just the big question mark. I think that was just a case of Utah got scared from the Gordon Hayward thing and, the Gordon Hayward, the max, oh, no, what do we do? Let's just lock him in. Let's just, you know, be safe and keep guys here.
What about the Morris twins? Now, here's the interesting part. Marcus got 4 years, $20 million. Markeith got 4 years, $32 million.
Well, then he's obviously the better one and deserves that money.
But you can't tell him apart almost.
I know
what happens. So what happens if you mail the wrong check?
They probably still split it down the middle anyways.
Yeah, they live together, I believe, in Phoenix.
Yeah, it's just I know one is better and one's more of a defensive guy. And
Marquise is a little bit bigger and he's a better rebounder.
Yeah.
And that's where the money went.
Yeah, that was just the look. You keep us together, we'll both sort of take little discounts and you know, we'll all, I don't know. They are who they are. They've peaked as players. I don't see either of them getting really better. Are they good deals? Well, you have to take them as a package. So,
well, let me ask you this. If you put the two players together and you put their talents together, you'd have a four-year, $52 million player. Would he be worth that?
Well, isn't that like Alec Burks' numbers?
That's about $10 million more than Alec Burks. I'm not trying to pick on Alec Burks. He played well coming out of Colorado, but they want him to be a point guard, but he plays like a shooting guard, and he doesn't shoot. I don't understand that deal. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't make any sense. And obviously the Cantor non-signing makes sense because...
Yeah, let him walk. See what he gets in the open market.
Yeah, let the market decide his value. I don't even think he knows what type of player he is yet.
Yeah.
Because they keep changing the system on him. Another
one was Bismack Biyombo. I don't think people were surprised by that. Corey Joseph, I don't know how good he really is because he's in San Antonio and he's very heavily protected. He's going to go in the open market. Iman Shumpert's a good player for the New York Knicks. I think some people were surprised they didn't get a deal done. But you know what? I think Phil Jackson's looking at greener pastures down the road when it comes to signing new players, and he needs as much salary cap space as possible.
What was Shumpert? It was just he's getting injured. He's not as good a defender as he was his first year.
Torn ACL hurt him there, yeah.
Yeah, and the real mystery non-signing from New York was declining Shane Larkin's option.
Oh, yeah. Right.
He's their starting point guard, and, oh, we don't want to pick him up for one, like, you know, he had a cap number of like $1 or $2 million.
It's like KJ McDaniels for the Sixers. This is like an audition. It's like, hey, how good can you be? And then if you're good, then somebody else is going to come take you.
But it wasn't like a high price on him. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand, like, why would you just get rid of him? I don't know. That seemed strange not to pick up his option.
Reggie Jackson's a little bit of pulling and pushing there with the agent, but it made sense because you got so much money tied up with Durant and Westbrook. Durant's going to be a free agent in 2 years, Westbrook in three. You got a Bacchus contract. It makes sense to basically wait it out and see what happens. And if he leaves.
With the agent, it was just like, you're going to pay him, right? He's good. And it's like, well, no, you know they're not going to pay him because all he is and all he will be is Westbrook's backup. You're not going to pay $11 million for that.
Mm-hmm. We already talked about Tobias Harris. Tristan Thompson, that negotiating stalled. You and I talked about that for the team preview. It did not surprise us because we knew that Cleveland had in mind the new salary cap coming forward in about 2 years and that they were probably going to have to ink Kevin Love and LeBron to those deals along with Irving's new extension that we talked about. And there just simply wasn't enough room for $7 to $8 to $9 million for Tristan Thompson.
Well, then there was reports that his agent was holding out for, like, max-type money, too, and...
You're going to be holding out a long time.
Like, he's not that good of a player. He's going to be a solid, you know... He'll be a solid, like, fourth option or a... He's not worth starter, you know, superstar money.
The two big elephants in the room for the ones who didn't get deals, we'll talk about the first one. That was Jimmy Butler with the Chicago Bulls. Played himself into that status, but what kind of money can he get? Can he get, like, Lance Stevenson money, or can he do a little better than that?
Well, Lance Stevenson was a bargain just because of the situation.
Absolutely.
What were the numbers? Years 48, like everybody else.
On Stevenson, you mean?
No, on Butler.
On Jimmy Butler? Oh, I don't know what his offer was. I'm not sure. It was probably the standard offer, like you just said.
Yeah, and he was probably holding out for max money and thinks he could play himself into max money. I don't think he's that great of a player to do it, but...
I'll tell you this, and it's ironic, is that... And the longer Derrick Rose is out, the Bulls might be worse. But the longer Derrick Rose is out, it helps Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, that makes sense because now he's the go-to guy. But I don't know if he's that elite, you know.
He's an elite defender, but that's about as much as he's.
And do defenders get max money? No, they don't.
Not in today's market. Now, maybe back in like 2001, guys like, remember Antonio Davis when he got max money?
Yeah, that was just...
What the F, yeah.
Yeah.
But and then the big one, the finals MVP, the Claw, Kawhi Leonard. I don't know what happened here. I think this is a situation where if you look at the spreadsheet on the salary cap for RC Buford's San Antonio Spurs and Greg Popovich's Spurs, is that the salary is very, very delicately organized in terms of salary, where Tony Parker agreed to an extension in the offseason, and it wasn't any – I don't think he even got more than maybe $16 million. Duncan took less money. He's at $10 million. Same for Ginobili. It's very, very delicate. It's very well organized. And now you have this agent saying, well, Kawhi Leonard wants $20 million. So now that blows you up. So now do you have to look forward to what money Duncan and Ginobili ask for and how long they will play in order to maintain your salary cap because of the new salary that Leonard's going to demand?
Well, I think that's San Antonio's reason of we don't know what our old guys are going to do, so let's just not clog everything up now. They're probably going to pay him anyways, but
does he deserve max money?
I don't know. Everyone seems to say yes, and I'm sort of questioning myself, like, why am I disagreeing with it all the time?
Well, Chauncey Billups was a finals. Now, I got to mention Jeffrey Jahelka. I hope I pronounced his name, but he killed us for not putting Chauncey Billups in the next 15 for our podcast. So, but Chauncey Billups won finals MVP, and I don't remember him getting max money or something to the level of, like, 18 to 19 million.
Yeah, well, from what Chauncey Billups, who are you going to take off that list? Is he better than Gary Payton or?
Oh, here we go. Would you put Chris Paul ahead of Chauncey Billups? Yeah.
Yes.
Sure. Would I put Dwight Howard ahead of Chauncey Billups? Sure.
Yes.
Would I put Ray Allen ahead of Chauncey Billups? Probably so. You know,
he's a Finals MVP, but that team was a team orchestrated, and it wasn't him dominating. It was just. The team won. You have to give the, you know, he's not a top. No, he's not next 15.
Yeah, he was more of a representation of the team, not like the man on the team, but still a great player. I mean, let's get out there, Jeff. He's a great player. He's also a huge James Harden fan, so you know I had to throw that out there about him being an MVP candidate. Just for him. Wink, wink.
Going back to Kawhi, I guess he's a max money player because he does everything, but.
Do jack of all trades get max money? That's the thing.
No, because jack of all trades, you still need to put four people around him.
Exactly. Like, what happens when I keep saying this to myself? What happens when Duncan and Ginobili leave? Parker gets older, and then you have to depend on Kawhi Leonard, and he has to make people better. That's tough. That's a tough spot to be in, and I don't think he's prepared for that. And
no.
When you make that money, you're saying, I'm ready to be the guy. Be careful what you wish for is what I say there.
He'll get it because, you know, I don't think they're not going to let him leave, and other teams aren't going to even sign him to an offer sheet because maybe that's just their point is they know other teams aren't going to sign him to an offer sheet, so they can sort of try to lowball him by a few million.
Well, it might be an Eric Bledsoe situation where he gets an offer sheet, but nobody wants to give him an offer sheet because they know the Spurs are merely going to match it.
Yeah,
so the agent tells him, don't sign an offer sheet. We will not sign any offer sheet you give us.
Well, that would make sense from his part now with the new cap, the new TV deal in 2 years. Just sign your – One year deal and then get more money.
It'd be a shame if he left for that reason, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to work something out. Next year, it looks like an interesting piece. I think the four that we see for sure, Anthony Davis, Damian Lillard, Andre Drummond, Bradley Beal. And then if you go down that way, you got Deion Waiters, Harrison Barnes, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Jonas Valanciunas, Terrence Ross, and Terrence Jones. That's going to be a pretty interesting little crop. We'll see. We'll go back to this next year, and we'll see what happened with those guys because their money is going to be coming up just like these people are. And like I had mentioned, if you have any questions or if you have any feedback, you can post it on the Facebook site or on the Facebook for Place to Be Nation when we post our podcast. You can send it to my Twitter account, at Andrew Reich. I'm not sure. Adam, are you very active on the Twitter?
I am not very active in the social media. I am extremely hard to find.
So, yes, written mail and a dove for Adam Murray at his house in New Hampshire.
Send smoke signals. I'll keep a lookout.
But, all right, so hopefully we caught you up pretty well with the regular season. We'll probably take a little bit of a break from the season catch-up because it seems like with the regular season in the start of it, you don't need to get, like, a weekly handling of what's going on. It's pretty easy to figure out within the first 2 or 3 weeks. And once we get into January and February, we'll definitely be picking up the pace. But for now, on behalf of – we'll just go ahead and say goodbye, Adam. I'm going to let you say the goodbyes.
Goodbye, Adam.
Goodbye, Adam. Goodbye, Andrew. All right. Take care, guys. We'll see you off the bounce.